This summer, the world's best tennis players are coming back to Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Open returns August 8th through the 23rd. Bigger than ever, with new fan spaces, incredible food, drinks, and entertainment all in one place. Voted Tournament of the Year by the players themselves. Community Weekend starts August 8th. Finals weekend, August 22nd and 23rd. Get your tickets now at cincinnatiopen.com.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Eamon Ryan is with me, Green Party leader and Minister for the Environment, Climate and Communications. He is going to be speaking at the Kennedy Summer School tomorrow, I think it is. Minister, you're very welcome to the Hard Shoulder. So I know the focus of your talk is climate change, the climate agenda, but not necessarily through the Irish prism, which is the conversations we often have, more an international view. Is that right?
Yeah, and particularly American, I mean, given the Kennedy School. And also maybe even, Karen, framing it this way. I mean, this is a week where Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Endorsed Donald Trump. And in a sense, reflecting back, his father, Robert F. Kennedy, Robert Fitzgerald Kennedy, was actually probably one of the first real international environmental leaders. He delivered a really famous speech back in 1968 when he questioned how we measure progress, how we measure gross domestic product. And what did he say? For too long, we seem to have surrendered personal excellence and community values to the mere accumulation of material things. That was fairly green and ahead of his time. And I think it's maybe tapping back to that spirit that I'm kind of thinking, talking about tomorrow, because we need that now. We need that in a world where our security depends on everyone taking part in protecting our natural world. And America, as the largest and rapidly expanding oil producer, as the largest and rapidly expanding natural gas producer, is, and also America, which has had real leadership, like it has, not in that tradition of Robert F. Fitzgerald Kennedy Sr., the likes of what Al Gore did and said, the likes of what Senator John Kerry, I saw providing real leadership. The question is, how can you get it through the House of Congress? How can you get things through the US Senate? And I think that's a big question of our day. I'm involved in international climate negotiations. I'll be going to New York for the UN General Assembly and going to Baku this autumn to take part in those negotiations. And actually, one of the biggest questions is, how can we get collaboration? How can we get American side? How can we get a Kennedy-like moonshot in this day to protect our natural world? And that's why I think that's an appropriate question for the Kennedy Summer School.
Have you been struck by the lack of focus in the US presidential debate and discussion thus far on climate?
It hasn't featured. It wasn't mentioned once in the Republican convention, but surprisingly, it wasn't either mentioned in any of the main speeches in the Democratic convention. Maybe because that's everyone's decided, well, it's already, you know, the sides are set in that. The Biden administration has done some very good work on climate. The whole industrial, the Inflation Reduction Act is putting $1 trillion into the clean green alternative. It is, in a sense, that's an industrial policy play as much as a climate play. And maybe to a certain extent, people think, well, that's a given. You know, a Trump presidency would be bad for the environment. Kamala Harris would be the opportunity to show leadership. But I think it needs to go beyond that. And we need to think, I mean, I think the first question is, how do you get it out of being an identity politics divisive issue? Why is it that on the right, you know, people who have, conservation starts with conserving the natural world. Conservatism, in a sense, can have that positive framework. People coming from, let's say, a religious background, they have an interest and a real commitment in protecting creation. And I think the really interesting question is the political one as to how do we stop this being the divisive issue, Fox versus CNN, and how it might become something that can... You can pull people behind the same way that Kennedy moonshot did in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of broadening it out into another area here. But I mean, just so many issues have got consumed by those identity politics problems in the States, haven't they? Whereby it's no longer a case of what the person says. It's just who the person is saying. I don't care what they say, but it's my guy who says it. So that's now my political belief.
It ain't just the states. I suppose the states is the most advanced or the most obvious version of it, but we're subject to it here too. I think it is connected to a wider issue. I'm sorry, you can broaden this out now very broad, but I think it is connected to the polarization of certain issues, you know, that the social media networks and others love a good row, love a divide, and a lot of disinformation and misinformation occurs in those spaces. So America may be the worst because I think its media particularly divides and has allowed itself to kind of, the whole fairness doctrine in media was got rid of 30, 40 years ago. And in that environment where it's infected media or can be a free for all, I think that's maybe why it's particularly bad there. But it's a real issue for all of us because, as I said, even if we do everything in Europe or elsewhere, if we don't see similar progress in other large emitting areas, China, America and elsewhere, then it won't work. So it is in our interest that American politics affects us all. And you have to be careful. Like, you don't jump into another country's election. You'd be the last people to kind of say holier than thou and look at us, aren't we great? But it is a real issue. Why is it that in America it has allowed climate become this? You don't even mention it because it's given that it's kind of one side thinks this and the other side thinks that. That doesn't serve anyone.
When you've been involved in these international negotiations, as you kind of centrally were last year, and you mentioned upcoming trips that you're going to be on as well, what's the appetite from the Chinese for change in that regard?
Well, they all see the thing about this issue is everyone's threatened. Like, China's at risk. Everyone's at risk. Like, the planet is the climate is a connected international system. The Chinese are at risk because the great rivers that they depend on, that their big mega cities rely on, is at risk because of climate change. And actually, where we have made progress in international talks was typically when, rather than being a divisive world where it's an industrial fight, let's say China versus Europe or America versus China, when we have seen progress in Paris back in 2015 and the signing of the Paris Climate Agreement, or also last year, like in Paris in advance of that, Obama sat down with Xi Jinping and they agreed to collaborate. And similarly, last year, in advance of the discussions in Dubai, Joe Biden sat down with Xi Jinping in Sunnylands, California, and they agreed to collaborate on this one issue. It's maybe one of the few issues in the world where you can still bring 195 countries together because everyone is threatened. And the understanding of that is increasing because in the likes of the States, they have forest fires. They have, you know, talking to a friend yesterday, just back from Texas, 45 degrees. Houston didn't have air conditioning for a good period this year because of storms and so on. I can imagine being at 45 degrees without air conditioning. So I think it is the one issue that can actually bring about a multilateral global cooperative system. And that's what we need to focus on rather than dividing.
Does the kind of the new diplomatic realpolitik make that any harder? You know, that the world is different today than it was in 2008 when Barack Obama sat down with Xi Jinping. You know, for this kind of multipolar world, and it changed again post the invasion of Ukraine. And there's more a sense that you've got Russia and China on one side of a divide and the United States and Europe on the other. I mean,
We have to vote. I remember, I always cite this because it really inspired me. At these talks 2 years ago, in this case it was in Egypt, it was not looking good. We were in a really difficult situation. The Antonio Guterres came into our, effectively the European dressing room, as it were. We had these daily meetings where we decided our own tactics. And he came in and gave one of the most inspiring speeches I've heard. And he basically made the strategic point. We cannot afford to divide. We cannot afford to divide either east-west or north-south. And I think Ireland, like, we're small. We're so small in global stage. But our voice is listened to, particularly in that approach, particularly maybe trying to heal the divide between north and south, because we come from our own, you know, cultural, historical perspective. Mm. And I think I keep going back to what Antonio Guterres said, is that we cannot afford to divide on this, because if we do, it brings us all down.
To what extent is there a view in the global south that some of the rhetoric around this is kind of wealthy Western countries pulling up the ladder behind them?
Oh, that's absolutely true. Listen, they have a real case because they haven't been responsible for the problem. They're suffering the worst. They have the lowest emissions, but they're seeing the most consequences. And the real truth is they're not seeing the investment in this. Like, there is an industrial revolution. The reason why America and China are vying, why America has tariffs on Chinese goods and so on, and Europe is starting to do the same and vice versa, is because there is a race now, an industrial race, towards this new, better, cleaner, greener economy. It is taking off. Like, it's not all negative. There's a solar revolution taking hold. It is transforming the world in Ireland as well as elsewhere. But the reality is, Africa, to take it that continent, the poorest, where 650 million people have access to no electricity, none, they receive about 60% of global solar radiation, but they only get less than about 1%, 2% of the investment in that new economy. So they're falling further behind. So they have a real case. There is a real case that we need to switch financial flows to meet that need and bring development and climate together. And that's the Irish position. That's why we, I suppose, are on the international stage, have some credibility, because we have a good traditional understanding of how to put this development perspective centre stage. And that's what we tend to do.
Like I say, more often than not, our conversations are through the Irish prism. But I do want to ask you about something Irish before you go. Mm. Week one of the transport plan. I made the point earlier that the sense seemed to be that it was working generally well, which, of course, was met with ire on the text line. The transport plan is a shambles, says one listener. I'm a bus driver using the keys mostly. It's as busy as always. People are just ignoring the signs and crossing the keys anyway. No problem. That's in Dave in Dublin. And another bus driver, actually a similar issue. I just drove a bus from Burkey to Ashton Quay. Four private cars going straight onto Aston Quay. The guy in the high-vis yellow was just sitting there beneath the big neon no entry sign doing nothing. So enforcement seeming to be a bit of an issue.
Yeah, we will have to make sure there is adequate enforcement. And I think those bus drivers, it's really important we listen to them, because one of the main primary reasons on this is that we get our buses going fast. It's really important. This is not anti-car. This is not trying to restrict access to the city. It's the exact opposite. It's trying to increase access to the city, try and bring life back into the centre of our city. And we do that best in terms of a bus carrying 70 passengers flying along the quays and into town and back out again is serving everyone's purposes. So, yeah, we're going to have to enforce it. It is working. I think some of the doomsday scenarios, some people said, haven't been borne out. It'll take time. These things always do take time to settle in. But every single time, I've been involved in transport campaigning for about 30, 40 years. I can remember going right back, you know, when we pedestrianised Grafton Street, oh, this would be disastrous. When we pedestrianised Henry Street, oh, this would be disastrous. It wasn't. In fact, we've never gone back. They were turning left at the bottom of Dawson Street. It'll destroy the city. It didn't. Turning right at the bottom of Georgia Street, calamitous. It wasn't. We've never reversed those. Now, we can reverse. If something doesn't work, you can always, you know, because these are relatively easy to introduce measures in terms of civil engineering. But the experience we've had and what we're seeing in cities right across the world is when you really create an effective public transport system, when you make it safe to walk and cycle and also provide access to the car, which is what we're doing here. But just it is allocating space to make sure the public transport and cycling and walking really work better. And Dublin's going to benefit. And it isn't just Dublin. We need to do this in Cork, Galway, Waterford, Limerick. We need balanced region development in other cities. So this is part of a process. It's one of the Pathfinder, but 35 Pathfinder projects we have around the country that I think can transform our country for the better. And yes, there'll be teething problems. Yes, we need to make sure there's strong enforcement. I'll be talking to the Minister, Helen McEntee, about that, if we do have any problem in terms of people not obeying the law. But it is working.
I think I demoted Roderick O'Gorman at the start of the interview now, as I'm about to wrap up.
I think
I called
you
leader of the Green Party, former leader of the Green Party, Minister Eamon Ryan. Minister, thanks a million for joining us here on The Hard Shoulder.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.